Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
iZotope Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, iZotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit iZotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. Listen up, dear listeners in the UK. There's a brand new guitar show this year, the Brighton Guitar Show. It's a one-day show happening on the 15th of July at the Brighton Racecourse, and it's going to be great. We'll be there along with loads of your favourite boutique and major brands like Two Notes Audio Engineering, Chapman Guitars, Fidelity Guitars, Thought B Effects, Pedal Patch, Bright Onion Pedals, Ranger Effects, NRG Effects, Great Eastern Effects, Iverson Guitars, Kurt Mangan Strings, Mayberry, Leighton, Lemon Audio, Xander Circuitry, and loads more. What more excuse do you need to come to sunny Brighton, the birthplace of guitar nerds, than a guitar show full of guitars, pedals, effects, and accessories? Come say hi, hang out, have a beer, and check out all the cool gear with Matt, JD, and I. You might even see a few of the OG guitar nerds hosts knocking about. For tickets, visit brightonguitarshow.co.uk or check them out on social media with Brighton Guitar Show. See you there.
Philip.
Yeah?
What does a sprinter eat before a race?
I have no idea.
Nothing. They fast. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by 40 Watt Podcast's Philip Carter.
I should have seen that punchline coming.
Yes. Well, I didn't give you much notice, but yeah, I'm still, thank you, dear listeners, for your continuing to send me dad jokes to read out on the start of each episode. I really am scraping the barrel. I can't work out if I should continue to ask you to send me them or ask you to stop, because most of them have been dreadful. but thank you anyway.
Point, though. That is the point. They can't be good. I even sent you one that I doubt you'll use, I'm going to tell it now because I love this one. Please and do. Said, I have to actually read it properly, because if I jack up the punchline, I'll never forgive myself.
You can't mess up a dad joke.
No, because they're already so bad. I can make it worse. So, Joe, you hear about Beethoven, how many people told him he'd never make it as a musician because he was deaf? He didn't listen.
Very, very good. That nearly made this week. It was on the short list, actually, but I figured because you were on it.
Well, it actually isn't in the format of a dad joke. You have to retell it a little bit, and it's extra work. Why do it?
Well,
why use more word when fewer do trick?
exactly, exactly. But Philip, thank you very much for coming back on the Guitar Nerds podcast. It's lovely to have you you back again.
I'm happy to be here so that you can be positive about all things and I can be the negative one.
Well, exactly. That's exactly why we have you on the podcast. But also just because your turnover of equipment that you buy is high. You've always got something new and exciting to talk about. It's always something interesting and cool. And I think it's really good for me, dear listener. I appreciate that you, dear listener, over 50% of you are in the US. But it's really interesting to see how I get that all the same gear virtually is available to any of us. But there are definitely different trends, and it's always interesting to hear what you, Philip, purchase, because it tends to not be stuff that would ever even be on my radar, which we will be talking about this episode, because you've got a handful of new things, including you've got behind you right now a pedal steel, which I didn't even really understand how it was how different it was from a lap steel until you were explaining it to me before we started the podcast.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, some friends and I, my wife and I got tickets for the Brothers Landreth show in Nashville, May, as we're recording this, it was a couple of weeks ago, almost, week and a half ago. And we invited some friends to join us. Scott from the Effects Loop podcast came down from Chicago. And then there is Jake from Man the Helm. He didn't go to the show with us, but he did hang out with us and do a bunch of guitar store hopping, because when you're in Nashville and there's, you know, more music stores per capita than anywhere else in the country, you got to go around and see what you can find. And so I did. We hit the traditionals, the Carter Vintage, East Side Musical Supply. But my favorite stores in Nashville are Fanny's House of Music, which always, that's if you want the weird stuff in Nashville, that's where you go to find the weird stuff. Like, they had a Ventura Gitorgan.
Gitorgan.
It's a guitar that you play that emits organ sounds. It literally got a Farfisa circuit in it. It's the wildest thing I've ever seen. Listeners, go look it up, watch YouTube videos. It's wild. It is still for sale if you were really in the mood. It's on their website. So Fanny's House of Music. But while I was there, I played a couple of player grade, great instruments. I played, the one that I really thought I was going to come home with was a 67 ES 125.
Oh, lovely.
It was priced right. It played great, but also I have a couple of things on order, so I didn't know if I could really spend that kind of money right now.
Yeah, yeah. Even a sensibly priced 60s Gibson ES series is
expensive.
It was
expensive. So, but it played, it sounded amazing. I couldn't get it out of my hands. And so I did the thing where you leave and you're like, I'll come back. If it haunts me, I'll come back, right? And if it's gone, it's gone. So we went from Fanny's to my other favorite music store in Nashville, which is Caldwell Guitars. I've had Silas Caldwell on my podcast before. He's a 15-year-old that owns a music store in Nashville. I mean, he's 16 now. He just had his birthday a couple of weeks ago. But we went there, and I discovered, I'm going to talk about a couple of things, Joe, and I'm going to try to go fast because I know you.
No.
We chat and things go long.
That's fine.
So I bought this. I've never heard of this company. They're based out of Italy. Mastro Valvola.
Which is a great name for an effects pedal company.
It really is. It's a great name. They make these really, listeners, I'm aware you can't see it, I'm holding it up, but they make these really great angled enclosures that are kind of reminiscent of Maris's enclosures.
Yeah, it's definitely that sort of vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that high quality, modern look, but very, very robust. Looks like, you know, it could kill a man if thrown.
I absolutely think it could, because some of the edges are a little sharp-ish. Not sharp, but this is called their Off One. And the Off stands for Octave, Fuzz, and Filter. And so it has a 2-foot switches. It's got a bunch of things. It does like octave up, octave down, then 2 sub octaves, and you have a dry blend. And it's got this nasty, just raunchy fuzz on it that I absolutely adore. It's got a mid switch, but then the thing that sent me over the top is the filter function,
right?
Because the filter can be put on an expression pedal. And I don't know how I'm going to work it into my next blues set, but I think I am. I'm going to blow some people's minds and maybe some speakers. But it's absolutely phenomenal. I when I started playing that and I realized it had the expression, I asked Silas and Tony. Tony is Silas's dad, if they had an expression pedal. So they grabbed one and I plugged it in and I laughed like a school kid for 30 minutes while playing this thing. I was having so much fun.
So it gives you the being able to move that filter around manually. Does it give you more like a manual phaser tone, or is it deep? Is it more guttural than that? Is it almost wah-like?
You know what? The manual, I've yet to use the filter manually. I only use it with the expression pedal. So it really feels almost like a synth. You know, when you roll back the filter on a synth and it becomes like super low and then it pushes into the nasally territory with the filter. That's what it does. And so if you use your expression pedal the right way, and not that there's a right or wrong way, but the right way to get this effect, listeners, I'm not telling you you're using expression pedals wrong. But if you use it in a certain range and you don't go the full range of it and you find where you like it, you can get sort of a wad out effect out of it.
Oh, that is very cool. So it's got two foot switches on there. Does the second foot switch engage those two sub octaves then, or does it engage the expression? Or
so there's two different modes for it, for how you can engage those. Oh, and look like a bad pedal user. I have the manual in front of me. So foot switches, there's two modes. In mode one, which is default, the left button activates the octave and the right one the fuzz.
Right.
In mode two, the right button acts as a general bypass for the pedal, while the left button controls the engagement of the high octave. If you want to use it as an octave fuzz that can then add in the sub octaves, you use mode one.
Got it.
But if you want to use it as an octave, as a fuzz, and then decide that you want the sub octaves in there and then engage the high octave, you can use it that way. That's the way I like to use it personally.
Yeah,
if I'm using it in like the blues rock setup, like blues rock synth, I would use it the other way around.
Sure. That it sounds fantastic. I'm gonna have to check out some demos for it afterwards. What was the
name of it? There's not a lot of them.
Of course.
It's the Mastro Valvola Off One.
There you go, dear listener. And go check it out. It sounds excellent.
Yeah. And so the other one I went back to Fanny's and decided, and I did not go back for that 125. As much as I wanted to, as much as I desperately wanted to, I have enough guitars.
He's behind a wall of about 20 guitars as I'm talking to him.
I have enough six string guitars, let's put it that way. So instead I went back and bought a Shobud Maverick 10 string pedal steel.
Right. Which looks incredible. I can't play lap steel or pedal steel at all. They're not my vibe. Harmonica, that's my calling. But
really?
Yeah, I'm no good. A big Rolling Stones fan growing up. So.
Oh yeah, so you had to learn harmonica. I have one of mine right here.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not great at it, but you know, I couldn't call myself a proper blues player if I didn't at least try to play it.
Exactly.
Well, the pedal steel, it's a lot different than a lap steel. I play lap steel, and I typically play lap steel in open G tuning, six strings. You still use a bar and finger picks if you want to do it that way. You can use just the pads of your fingers. You just don't quite get the attack. Right. But once you bring in pedal steel, and it's its own platform, and mine's a 3x1 setup, which means it has three foot pedals and one knee lever. Now, I've had a pedal steel before a couple of years ago, and it was a 3x4. So it had three foot pedals and four knee levers. And I felt like I was doing the wildest version of the Funky Chicken while trying to play that thing with those levers. And I got frustrated. And what I should have done is folded the knee levers up and not thought about them, because you can fold them out of the way.
Right.
And just don't play them and learn to play just without them. But instead, I got frustrated and I sold it. So I've really wanted to play one again, though. I found this one at a decent deal. They cut me a little bit better deal. And I brought it home. So I've been playing it a little bit, starting to get it under my hands a little bit. But the tuning is very, very different from anything you'd play on guitar, 10 strings. Yeah. So you got to sort of remap your brain a little to play it.
I see. It takes up a lot of space as well. That's a big old instrument, you know?
It is a big instrument. It's basically a small keyboard. So.
Yeah exactly. No, that is cool. So I saw an instrument that I didn't know existed the other day. Sorry, mentioning harmonica and speaking about this, you know, your weird pedestal is reminding me of it. The glass harmonica.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed.
Invented by Benjamin Franklin.
Unbelievable. I saw that as well. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin made a glass harmonica.
It's a super eerie sounding instrument to the point that I think they believe they used them. Spiritualists used them in their ceremonies or however it is they did their things. It's a super eerie sounding. And essentially, it is concentric glass bowls on a rod that rotates through a pool of water, and you play it by spinning the rod and placing your finger on the glass bowls.
Yeah, so you cycle it like it's with pedals, don't you? You rotate on the floor. That's how you keep it moving. Like
now, listeners, I need you to understand. I did not pre-look this up. I am such a nerd that I knew this off the top of my head.
Yes, that is. I am. I thought I was dropping some mad knowledge here, but. But no, as soon as I said it, you were able to tell me absolutely everything about it. I was like, oh, I thought it was going to be impressive that I knew Benjamin Franklin had made it. So, okay.
No, I'm just a super massive nerd about this stuff, man. If it makes music, I want to know about it. I literally just had a Facebook conversation with a friend of mine last night about the hurdy-gurdy. I mean, I will talk about anything music-related.
I have a friend who lives in Japan who is after a hurdy-gurdy, a really difficult instrument to get out there.
Yeah.
So he's every time he comes, he's about to come back, he's like he's asking, he gets in touch with me and he's like, you don't know any distributors that might distribute a company that makes hurdy-gurdies, and if so, is there any way you could get one on demo or something for when I'm here? Because he doesn't want to buy it without, you know,
right, he wants to play it first.
Playing one. But yeah, it's not like you can walk into a guitar shop and ask for their finest hurdy-gurdy.
You get some looks. You absolutely get some looks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Philip, you've also got some other cool new gear, which we're going to talk about. But first of all, I need your help a little bit.
All right.
I mentioned maybe last week with Matt, or the dear listener, that I've got like a bunch of pickups that are being sent to me by different brands at the moment. It's really really odd. Lots of different pickup brands got in touch with me at the same time and were like, would you like to try these out? And of course, my answer to anyone wanting to send me things to try out is yes.
Yeah.
And Fuzzy Duck, who are a brand that are a part of Guitar Anatomy, this you know, like a bit of a guitar parts supply store over here in the UK, they've started making these Fuzzy Duck pickups, with the idea being that they're you know, they are all vintage inspired or based on something that they love. They're trying to make something brilliant and cool, but make them very affordably priced at the same time. So it's kind of almost like an entry level way into people who actually want to pick up. That's not just, this is a humbucker.
So in a way, for American listeners, in a way, it sounds similar to what Stumac is doing with their Golden Age pickup line.
Right. I see. I wonder even if that was the inspiration, because, of course, Stumac are, you know, very much world famous for being the big
And I've tried a few of those Golden Age pickups. They're very good. They do not deserve the cheap label that they get, because they're inexpensive.
Ah, yes, exactly what these are. So these are the Fuzzy Duck. They've sent me their silver 90s, which you can get from like £39.99 in pounds.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is very good. For a single, obviously you can buy a set or a single in cream or in black. And you can even they have a little Fuzzy Duck logo. But if, you know, you're worried about people knowing that you've got £40 pickups in your guitar, they also do an option without the Fuzzy Duck logo.
For you posers out there that care that people see the expensive gear, as I say, with a lot of expensive gear. but I really hope that their packaging is a little faux fur duck that it comes in, though, because if they don't, they missed a trick right there.
Yes. Well, mine just came in an envelope, but this could be just a marketing set. So I don't know. I'm not sure what you get. But yeah, so the Silver 90s that they've sent me, they're based on the original 1948 Gibson P90.
Oh, cool.
Which is very cool. So dual Alnico 5-bar magnets, short wide bobbins, plain enamel wire, all the things that you want. So it's going to give you that very, very clear Gibson P90 sound. The sets are great, like 9.5K on the bridge, 8K on the neck. So you've got just that little bite that you want off of the bridge pickup. So they've sent me a set and I was like, brilliant. I'm really excited about these. I'll just put them in my and I realized that actually at the moment everything I've got is like some Jet guitars, like a Tele and a Strat, a Baum, and then the Grez, Jazzmaster, a couple of harmonies, but nothing with a Gibson sized P90 in it. So I need your help, Philip. Basically, I need to get something.
I don't know how you've gotten to whatever age you are right now, Joe. I think you recently had a birthday. Whatever age you happen to be, and you don't have a P90 guitar.
Well, I do have P90 guitars. You know, the Baum is P90, but this I feel if you make like a Gibson style 48 style P90, I don't want to put it in the Baum. I want to put it in something Gibson-y. So actually, a lot of my stuff is like you get gold foil P90s in the Harmony, certainly in the Harmony Juno, which are very good. P90s are definitely, but my preferred pickup sound anyway, just because they do a bit of everything. But I just, I've got nothing Gibson-y. Now, of course, this is essentially me getting a guitar that I don't necessarily need at the moment.
Sure.
Just to do the job of retrofitting in some P90s, which will be lots of fun. But for that reason, I don't want to drop £2,500 on a guitar just to demo the pickups. So I'm thinking like
something. And I highly recommend you don't spend that kind of money for this purpose.
Yeah.
Please don't.
Exactly. But I do want to get something affordable, Gibson-esque, that's going to take P90s. That's
easy peasy. I can do this for under $200.
Under $200. Okay, that's keep talking.
Epiphone Les Paul Special with P90s.
Oh.
Done.
That's really that affordable. I thought all Epiphones were like over $400 now. No, very reasonable.
Yeah, you can still get an Epiphone Les Paul. Actually, I'm sorry, Musician's Friend in the U.S. has a sale on them right now for $159 in worn TV yellow.
Oh wow. Wow, that is an aggressive price. So are they bolt on at that price?
Yes,
they must be bolt on.
At that price, okay. They're bolt on.
Okay, that's still a fantastic price. I was thinking like I don't really want to go. You know, over here we've got the Harley Benton, the Thomann brand.
They're sure.
Everyone's getting a lot of those at the moment, but they're fine. They're fine. Yeah. I think I've seen more problems than I haven't with. I'm not, dear listener. They're probably great for the money. I just know a couple of people who have ended up having nightmares with them, quality wise, which you would expect at that price point anyway. So
sure.
I'm sure there are plenty of great ones out there as well. So I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And then I'm sort of looking at other things. You know, like I was looking at some of the new Epiphone Les Pauls, but then I'm like, oh, they're like £500-600 now. That's a chunk. Yeah. Sire, they're sort of coming out of nowhere, making a lot of great Gibson-esque versions of those.
I've been really intrigued by that H7 they make, the Larry Carlton.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't read that article yet.
I haven't read that, but I watched Tim Pierce's video with it.
Right. What do you think? How are you sitting on those?
I don't know. I really want to try one. I really wish I knew someone at Sire to send me one so I could just try it and instead of buying it and trying to figure out and then maybe reselling it later to recoup funds. But because I want to really compare it to, I have a 58 reissue 335. And so I'd really love to see how it, does it really stack up against it? Larry Carlton seems to believe it, and that man has played a lot more guitar than me.
Oh, yeah. I've seen mixed things, people being like, you know, how do you, like, the guy saying they're as good as Gibson, right. But also they've made him the guitar, you know, for goodness sake. Like, he's, you know, there's an element of him in bed here. But that said, it's Larry Carlton. If he wanted to play a Gibson, he could do that. He can play any guitar on the planet, and he's chosen to play Sire. I kind of thought the same when Marcus Miller started teaming up with Sire to make the basses when he left Fender and his signature model. And I read the stuff that he was saying, and he was just saying, look, I want to be a part of a thing that young people can have access to. I don't want to have an instrument that's you know, obstructively priced for them, but is still top quality. I don't think he was ever saying that a Sire jazz bass is going to be better than one of his American custom shop Marcus Miller jazz basses, but he was saying these are good enough for me to play live at every single live performance. And that's
young players can afford them, or new players, or however you want to phrase that, beginning and novice players, they can afford a pro level instrument.
Exactly.
I call it pro level. Some people want to argue with that. I'm like, a pro is playing it live on every gig. It's a pro level instrument.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But so I don't know. So we'll see. I tell you what I was surprised about when I did start like looking around for something to put this in. I had no idea how affordable Gibson Les Paul Special tributes were.
Man, yeah. The Les Paul tribute. So everybody, that's my big thing. And I know that, listeners, I know I'm the Gibson apologist here. I realize that's who I am. That's the identity I've taken on. But when people start talking about, I can get a classic player Strat for XYZ dollars, and I have to pay $2,000-$3,000 for a Gibson. Well, yeah, but you're comparing apples to bologna. It's not the same argument at all. Where you've got the tributes, that's their most affordable, U.S. made nitro finished Gibson guitar, and what are they brand new? Like $900, $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. Over here, it's like £750 for one of those. That's aggressively affordable. And you're absolutely right. Like, you know, without us becoming Gibson apologists on the podcast, Gibson get a lot of flack for being obstructively expensive, whereas Fender get a lot of support for having very reasonably priced guitars. But what Gibson actually do is they make a US-built guitar for probably, I don't know, are we at a third now of what Fender want for an American-made Fender? It's probably around a third. It's not even half anymore. You know, where does the American professional start now? £1,800, and it's £750 for a
Let me see. American professional Strat over here starts at $1,700.
All right, so I'm a bit out there in that case. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
But yeah, well, you got to tack on getting it over there, all that. Yeah. But looking at these Gibson, just going back, you can buy a set neck nitro finish, US made Les Paul Special Tribute with P90s, brand new for $1,000.
That is, it's like being in the 90s again, people. But yeah, that these are all good options. If you've got suggestions for me, dear listener, I'm going to deliberate over the next couple of weeks. So, you know, let me know. Yeah. I need to get it sorted quickly. But
if the bolt on neck is an issue for you, and honestly, those have the old headstock too.
Right.
Let's be honest. I hate that old Epiphone headstock. Yeah. The Epiphone inspired by Gibson Les Paul Special is $499 USD. So.
Right.
I think that's an incredible deal. I love the Epiphones I've played since they did the revamp of the line. I picked up I gigged an Epiphone Firebird for a few gigs, one of the inspired Firebirds. I only sold it when I bought a Cowher Banshee, and I've since traded the Banshee. So now I don't have a Firebird body style at all anymore. But I picked up one of the Epiphone inspired by J45 acoustics in a store.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
And I tell you what, that might be the best under $1,500 acoustic guitar I've ever played.
Wow.
By a long shot.
Yeah. I haven't tried any of the inspired by Epiphones, but I really want that statement to be very true. And I do trust you that it is. But
yeah, it was one of, and maybe it was just that one. We all know that every guitar can vary, but that one that I played in Jackson, Mississippi at Music and Arts, was the best under $1,500 acoustic guitar I've ever played.
Wow. Yes. I really need to get a new acoustic at the moment. I keep looking at all the, I am going to get one, over the next couple of weeks. I've been looking at a lot of the Japanese like lawsuit era, acoustics. Yeah. Cause whilst I feel like, and dear listener, over the last few years, people have worked out that Tokai and Bernie, and Orville made great versions of American guitars in the 70s and 80s. And now, when I look at prices on Reverb and eBay, they are kind of they're being sold for kind of what they're worth now. They go for a bunch of money. They didn't used to. You know, when I was, like 3 years ago, when I was selling all the Japanese stuff, it was like I was getting half the money for what they're going for now, which is fine. It's just people have cottoned on, which is good.
Yep.
But when it comes to acoustics, they haven't at all yet. Now, I was looking at a Mountain, which is the Martin, the Japanese version of Martin. It's the logo is the same font, but it says Mountain instead of Martin.
Because I was thinking, you said that, I was like, I had a Goya at one point, which I think was actually a Japanese arm of Martin.
Right.
I think they were actually owned by Martin. And I think those are underpriced for what they are.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like, I was looking at a 1972 Mountain, their version of a D28, and it was in its solid Sickless Spruce back and sides, and it is it's £250 or £350, which is remarkably cheap. I mean, I'm not, and the listing very much is like, look, this isn't a Martin, you know, you're not getting, but a 1970s acoustic made out of solid wood for £350, I will take that.
Yeah,
that sounds good. So
I mean. Well, Joe, if you're just looking for a vintage instrument, you know, the early 90s stuff is vintage now. So you can just grab something like that. I was driving the other day, and I think this leads us into one of the topics we wanted to talk about. I was driving the other day and got behind a car. And it was like a 90s Camry. Right. And he had the antique tag on his car. So here in Mississippi and in some other states, you can once a car reaches a certain age, your tag that you get for your car, you can get what's called an antique tag. It basically says this car is so old that it's almost not worth it to keep buying the tag for. That I'm really hyperbolizing here,
sure,
but.
Sure.
that you can get a tag. And basically, once you get the antique tag, you never have to pay for a tag again. That's the end of buying new tags for that car. Right. And it was a 90s Camry with an antique tag. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, we're getting there, aren't we? I'm not... The classic vintage stuff still needs to stay at the same point in time. I'm not accepting the move on from stuff, because stuff wasn't cool in the 90s. 80s stuff maybe just, but
if you think about it though, at the time when people, so I feel like, of course, I didn't play guitar until 1999. I took up the instrument late in life. I was 18. So you can do the math now and figure out how old I am if you want. But the 90s was when that vintage craze kind of really started. Because before that, in the 80s, no one cared even the tiniest bit about hacking up a 50s or 60s guitar to make it do what they wanted it to do.
Yep.
The number of Strats that have been brutalized to do the Hank Marvin thing, or to do some other things that they should not have been doing, is astonishing. But in the 90s, people started to care about that. So if you think about that, let's take 1995. Actually, yeah, so 1995, we'll start there. 25, that's 27 years after the 1958 Gibson Burst. 27 years. What is 27 years from 1995?
No, yeah.
Last year. Yeah. We are further away from 1995 than 1995 was from 1958. If my math is right.
Yeah. Sure.
No, my math is right. So it sort of tracks, because that was when we started calling those instruments vintage. We're at that age where 90s are vintage.
Yeah, depressingly so. That is true.
Sorry for the math, listeners.
No, that's okay. That's okay. He's just made me feel terrible.
So by that right, I have a vintage Made in Mexico Strat that I'll be happy to sell you for $3,000 because it's vintage.
Well, speaking of vintage stuff, I was only finding out, this is going to be another one of those things that you know about and knew well about, but I was only really finding out about Kalamazoo as a guitar brand recently.
I know, this is where I actually know a little less about this than I know about the glass harmonica.
Right.
but I do know that, I knew it was a brand. I don't really know all that much about the history of it. So
right. Yeah.
You probably might know more than me.
Well, I mean, it's literally what I've been reading today. I came across basically a listing for a Kalamazoo guitar, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I kind of looked like the really affordable Japanese made sort of US knockoff guitars from the 70s. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I don't know that much about this brand. I mean, I obviously it's got to have something to do with the place, and yes, it did. Yeah. Of course, it was Gibson's budget brand before they bought out their competitor Epiphone. So from 1933 to 1942, Gibson were producing archtop and acoustic guitars and lap steels and things like that. But those guitars, they're 1933 to 1942. So if you want to find one of their acoustics, they are very appropriately priced for a guitar of that of that era. They are, you're looking, well, it's not that much, but you're looking at about £1,600 for a guitar from that time period. But even after they Gibson took on Epiphone, they dealt with Gibson as their main brand, Epiphone as their mid-level brand, and Kalamazoo as their budget brand. And so between 67 and 69, they were producing these like Fender Mustang Music Master style bodies and SG style bodies, very much with that Music Master feel to it. So that, like, just a Strat pickup, just like a single Strat pickup in the sort of Mustang style instrument, and a pair of them in the SG. There was a Maestro Vibrola tailpiece fit on the premium version. I think the KG2 was the SG, KG1 was the Mustang style body, and A was added as a suffix if it had the Vibrola. They came in those like classic budget colors, like Dakota red and Sonic blue, but like very bold Sonic blues. The bodies Masonite. Yeah. It was some of the first use of Masonite wood on budget instruments to keep them super lightweight. But also, I kind of feel probably pretty characterful in how they sound, the mix of that Masonite with that single coil pickup. Obviously, these are budget instruments. They didn't last very long, but they are extraordinarily cool looking. And I found a 1966 KG1 in what looks more like an Arctic white than an Olympic white. Like the headstock is gorgeous, and it's got those lovely little the pearl tuners. It looks fantastic. £350. What the price is for one over here. But I mean, it's the only one available on Reverb in the UK. It doesn't even look like there was that much Kalamazoo stuff that you could get over your side of the pond. But
no, I did a quick Reverb search for Kalamazoo, and in the US it's only acoustics.
Right.
I'm only getting acoustics, although I am staring at this. It says it gives a range 33 to 43 Kalamazoo KG31.
Right.
It's an acoustic that's in Nashville. It's an arch top in a beautiful sunburst. And in the description, it says it's basically a Gibson L50, big neck. It has a top crack that has been repaired, but otherwise there are no issues. How does an almost 90 to 100 year old guitar not have more issues than that? It's gorgeous. And of course, you know, they want $1,500 for it, and it's in Nashville, Tennessee, so I'm gonna bet they're gonna get it.
Yeah,
but it is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a brand that I think I'm gonna, you know, look a bit more into and find out what else they did and see if, I mean, I might take a pop on this guitar. It's not a lot of money, but yeah. I'm more interested in the arch tops and stuff. But just the fact that there was this 60s budget guitar brand that just passed me by, I guess.
Chicago Music Exchange has an article on their history on their website. So if you Google it, you can find that article.
Yes.
I found it while trying to find more information, you know, in the midst of podcasting, which is what you do. You Google a lot on podcasts.
that's very true. But yeah, I just thought it was really cool. A Gibson made single pickup Mustang. Yeah. From 1966. I would take that. That sounds great. Yeah,
100% I would take that. That sounds, these look really good. Now, there are some cheaper ones, but all of them have issues below the $1,500 mark. there's one that I looked at that was like $895, and the top picture is beautiful.
Right.
And it's they call it a KN31. It is gorgeous. Until you flip through the pictures and you see that there is, I don't know, a quarter-sized hole in the upper bout on the side of it. I'm like, no, I don't want to really deal with that. Not at $900.
No, exactly. So more on this to come, dear listener. I think I'm going to get excited about a sort of weird budget US brand from the 60s now. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, Philip, you've also expanded your amplifier collection recently with an amp brand that I just, you know, we only ever talk about them when you're on the podcast.
There's a reason not a lot of people talk about them, because they're expensive. And I got really lucky. I actually had a ridiculous new amp day a few weeks ago, where I had two Turok amps arrive at the same time. it is a ridiculous, I'm now officially at that point where I have to decide, when you gain more Turoks, cause I now have three Turok amps. Is this linear? Is this logarithmic? So two Turoks is four rock, but what is three Turoks? Is it eight rock or is it six rock? I don't know. That's a really bad joke, y'all. I'm so sorry.
That was pretty terrible.
So I got into a deal, and I traded an amplifier for a two rock studio signature head with a 410 cab. Now, they normally people have a 112 cab with them. Right. The 410 is one of the things that enticed me the most about this deal. So I traded a divided by 13 AMW 39, which is Fred at divided by 13. That's his Marshall style, his EL 34. It's got a master volume, which is something he normally doesn't do. It's got an effects loop. It's his only model that comes with an effects loop, I think. He normally doesn't do that. You can request him to do one, but he's not a big fan of effects loops, so he doesn't like doing them. I had that amp, and I got that amp, and I've been meaning to do like a YouTube video on flipping and talking about the long play, the long-term flip. And this is how I've gotten to the point with most of the gear I have. I've done a lot of long-term flipping. I get something that I like and wanted to play and enjoy, but I also know that this is potentially fodder down the road for flipping into something else that I really want. I try not to get really attached to these things that are long-term flips. Right. So, I'm going to give you the quick lineage. So in 2018, it may have been 17, but I think it was 18. I bought a RectoVerb, a Mesa Boogie RectoVerb combo, which is a 50 watt, two channel, dual rect. I think it's a single rectifier. I love that combo. I love that amp. I've owned two of them now at this point. I think it's a great, one of the better amps Mesa's ever made. And that makes me a little controversial. most people don't, you know, that like blues and clean stuff, don't like that rectifier series. But I think the RectoVerb and the TremoVerb were two of the best they've ever made. But I paid $700 for that.
A very reasonable price.
Very reasonable.
They've only gone up a little bit. Popular back then, surely.
Yeah. No, they were less. Nobody wanted. They weighed 100 pounds. Right, they're right. Super heavy. I see. I don't know what's that 5 stone. I don't know how y'all's measurements work.
Neither do we.
So I bought that and had it for a little while and played it, gigged it. But an opportunity came to trade that amp into a Jackson Amp Works Newcastle 18.
Excellent.
Which was like Jackson Amp Works little like EL84 18 watt. Yeah. Two controls, volume and tone. And that was it.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, it was a great amp. But then, you know, I got that for a little while, played it, and then, you know, long-term flip, eventually flipped it and traded it for, here was the first step change. I traded it for a Victoria 2112, which is their Tweed Deluxe market, Victoria Amps, Tweed Deluxe amp, style amp. That's a great amp. I had that amp for a couple of years because I loved that amp. But the pandemic hit and small combos suddenly skyrocketed in value. and so I ended up trading that Tweed Deluxe, that 2112, for the divided by 13 AMW head. And I still needed a cab, so I found a cab. I had to convince the seller to ship it to me because he really did not want to ship. I got the cab for $450, and I think I paid $100 to have it shipped to me. So that puts me $1,150 into this divided by 13 rig.
Right.
And then I occasionally would put that divided by 13 rig up as trade bait just to see if I found any good offers. And someone offered me the Turok with the 4x10 cab in trade for the divided by 13.
As a straight trade.
I had to pay my shipping.
That is an astronomically affordable price for a Turok. I'm not suggesting that that's an affordable amount of money, but
I'll be honest, for $1,150 feels like an affordable price for any amp nowadays.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
$1,150. Right. Let's put it this way: a brand new reissue PC board made in Mexico deluxe reverb will cost you $1,700.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we are. It's weird, isn't it? At a time when everyone stopped using amplifiers because, you know, the gigs happen way less. Amps have got more expensive, not cheaper.
Yeah.
But fine.
It's a weird thing. So I got that one. But then at the same time, I had saved some money for something else. And I had a That's all, because I have a Reverb Search for Two Rock set up to give me certain alerts at certain price points. And a Burnside, which is their 28-watt Tweed.
This is where I was going next in the conversation. I was going to ask you about the Burnside, because this is the one I want out of the range.
Yeah, so it popped up, and it was relatively local. It was about a three-hour drive, if I were to drive it. I messaged the seller and said, "Hey, I'm relatively local. You know, I'm nearby. I'd be happy to drive and meet to pick it up. You know, what kind of price could we do for a local, you know, exchange?" I didn't say cash. Reverb doesn't like if you want to take things off Reverb. They get mad at you and they suspend your account. But, you know, I said, this kind of local deal. He messaged me back, said, "You know, I don't really do meetups or anything like that." But he said, "Since you're so close, I can do this." And he offered me a stupid price. Because you can respond with an offer, right?
Yeah, of course.
So you responded to the message with an offer. I said, "Yep, thank you very much. Even if I have to wait for it, even though I could have gone and picked it up." I will not say that price publicly, but it was a lot less than they typically sell for.
Right.
And it was a combo. I really wanted the head and cab, but you know, at that price point, I couldn't argue.
So good, dear listeners, like the Burnside combo. If you've not seen it, it's taller than it is wide. If that makes sense, you know, so less like the, you know, the traditional Fender-esque look of an amp combo. But they're gorgeous. Is it in the sort of light form, the cream Tolex?
No, mine is in the black Tolex with the wheat grill cloth.
Oh, very lovely.
And it is classy. So I say black Tolex, it's actually black Tweed.
Right.
It's not regular Tolex. It is a Tweed, but it's a black Tweed. And it sounds incredible. Adam Miller, Australian guitarist. If you're not familiar with him, you really should be. He's become a friend over the years. I had him on the podcast a little while back. He uses one of these a lot.
Right.
And it is just, it is an astonishing sounding amplifier. I have no complaints about it whatsoever.
Pair of 6L6s in the power section.
Yep. 6L6s.
I don't know what the preamp's doing. 12AX7 and probably something else.
I think it's just the 12AX7. I think it's just the one.
Very, very cool. Just bass and treble, volume control, and a presence control, which I'm all about.
And a bright switch.
Oh, and there's a bright switch as well. Oh.
And there is a bright switch.
That's even better.
So what that gives you is essentially the, you know, in a traditional Tweed amp, I think this is how it is. At least it sounds like to me, based on the Tweeds I've had. You have a bright input, two bright inputs, and two normal inputs. I think all that switch does is flip which one you're in.
I see.
And it adds whatever that cap is, whatever resistor. Y'all, I don't work on amps. I don't know these terminology things. It does the thing, and it sounds great.
How does the volume control work on it? Is it like Fender's, where it's really random, you know, sort of between one.
That's a great way to describe the Fender.
that's exactly what they are. But it's between one and, you know, one and a half, there's 20 decibels worth of volume, and then nothing past that point. Yeah,
it's pretty good, but I will have to admit I'm not entirely sure, because I've been using it either through a Two Notes or an attenuator, so I get to turn it up and do whatever I want. So I never have to worry too much about where the volume knob sits.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, fair enough.
That's
fair
just
enough,
the whole thing.
It does look very cool. You've probably mentioned it to me before, but I totally forgot that was the other Two Rock amp that you got. That is incredible.
It is a monster amplifier. I am fully on board. Well, not just the Two Rock, but there are some, you know, there are some amps that are just expensive because they want to be expensive. I'm not going to name company names. I won't do it. But there are some that I don't think, if you're going to get into the expensive amp game, or what I call the end game amplifiers, like there's no better. There's just different.
Right. Sure.
But if you're going to get into them, there are some out there that really, on close scrutiny, they don't bring the value. But there's some that I'm big believers in. Two Rock is one of those that has become, I've all three Two Rocks I own, I would not own if I had not gotten a monster deal on all three of them that brought them, you know, into the realm of affordability for me.
Right.
because I get the new two rock prices are a lot, and I get that. But I think there's real value there if that's what you want. And I'm a big believer in life is short. So y'all, we're on this earth for very few years. Doesn't matter how many they are. If you want the thing and you can afford and you can get the thing without putting yourself in the poorhouse, save the money and buy the thing you want. Don't keep buying things that's good enough or that'll do, or I don't know, it does the job. But do they make you happy and like excited to play? Because this life is way too short to not be excited about playing guitar or playing music.
I often make that mistake. I often decide to save a little bit of money in order to get something, you know, that's a more affordable version of the actual thing that I want. And you're absolutely right. It's a terrible idea. It just
and then you end up spending more money because you lose money on that when you sell it. And then you do another step change and then you sell that and you lose money on that sale. Now, if you're good, you don't lose money. I understand that. I've spent the last 20 years doing my best not to lose money. I get mad at myself when I break even selling something. I'm that person. No, I don't want to treat it like it's a business, but that's who I am. It's like if I'm moving something, I better be upgrading or making more money on it.
Right, right. Okay, that's a good way to think.
Yeah.
But you know, different would do if you buy a lot of custom stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Most of the times that I've been bitten have been something that was a little too custom or just a little too niche.
Yeah, yeah, that is always the case. Now, the question duck is letting me know that, dear listener, I should let you know that after Philip and I finish this podcast, we're going to be heading over to the Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where each week we record an extra episode where we talk about subjects and answer questions from the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week we're going to be talking, Jeffrey Wax was talking about you know, pedals that you've had for a while but didn't appreciate until recently, so we're going to be talking about those. John Bye wants to know about affordable vintage guitars that are European. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have a crack at that. And and Peter Pesce pointed out this great topic earlier this week when he shared one of Barry from Grez Guitars videos on where, you know, Barry's just making something very cool out of some very cool recycled material, and how Peter regrets giving so much direction to Grez on what he wanted on his guitar when builders like that can be so creative. So maybe we'll talk around sort of that subject, especially with Grez guitars in mind.
I have another Grez too. I haven't talked about that yet.
You have another Grez?
Yeah, I made another trade.
Okay. We'll talk about that on the Patreon episode.
Yes, we will.
We'll talk about that. But
buy a Grez guitar, y'all. Buy a Grez guitar, y'all. Save up the money. Just do it. Tell Barry to do his thing. They're incredible.
Well, Barry is an absolutely lovely fella, and he makes absolutely brilliant guitars. He's just a gem. It's just one of those people that stands out in the community. I know we're going to talk about this on the Patreon, dear listener, but he really does, and they're really good. Honestly, you know, I don't believe that all of you would love it. You just love it. Just get one. They're going to be great. Before we go, I have been spending a bit of time with Great Eastern Effects Co. with a couple of their pedals that they've sent me recently. Now they make there's a small range of pedals in the Great Eastern Effects Co. range. Actually, only three. They make the Focus Fuzz. They make the Small Speaker Overdrive, and they make the Designer Drive, which I demoed a couple of weeks ago, dear listener, on the Sound Sample. This time I've been messing around with the Small Speaker Overdrive, which I'm told by David, who owns the company, that this is the best-selling pedal. I always thought it would be the Designer Drive because that is a drive pedal that allows you such control over this simple rotary that you can kind of turn it into anything you want. So if you're ever unsure about what sort of drive you want, this is kind of giving you a whole bunch of them with very intuitive, simple controls, and you sort of can work out what you like and then have a really great sounding drive pedal like that. The Small Speaker Overdrive, on the other hand, is a bit more niche. It's a low gain overdrive inspired by that classic small amp in the studio Steve Cropper, Eric Clapton, Joe Walsh style tones. So we're talking about the that amp's where's the name of the amp gone? The Fender
Supro? No. You're talking about the Champ.
Champ, yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's that sort of thing. So it's like that boxy overdrive. It's definitely like a niche sound. It's certainly not, when you get an overdrive, you might try to create that sort of thing for a section, but it's not necessarily what you'd automatically be looking for. Like an overdrive that is literally advertising itself as kind of sounding boxy, but it's very, very good. And far more versatile than you'd think. And so I've recorded a little sound sample with it, dear listener, but basically I've got it off for the very start, and then I'll turn it in, and then all of the guitars, all of the other guitars also just have the small speaker overdrive. There's some reverb and stuff like that on them. But what I'm saying is it's acting as the preamp as well as the drive pedal. And I really like it. I really like a transparent drive anyway, those low to mid gain drive pedals. And this one I just found dynamic, reactive, but with the mids in just the right area to really poke through. I think very highly of this company. I think what they're making is high quality. You know, they're trying to be different. They're trying to make something. They're not just making another overdrive. They're going after very specific tones and doing a fantastic job of it. So here is the small speaker overdrive by Great Eastern Effects Co. There it was, the Great Eastern Effects Co. small speaker overdrive. Really, really good. Like, for just an authentic, earthy sounding overdrive, it would be difficult for me to try and win Gear of the Year with this product because it's just a transparent overdrive. But
also, it came out in the same year as the Benson. the T-Rex Benson.
Sure, yeah. But I do really like it. And actually, if I'm talking about gear that I have liked the most this year, this pedal is very, very high up there. It's a high quality, authentic sounding.
Joe, did you intentionally bring the Swampy Blues because I'd be on? Is that where that came from?
I would love to say it was. I meant to do this last week actually, but I ran out of time, so I never got round to it. But dear listener, that is actually about all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So Philip and I are going to head over to the Patreon right now, and we'll talk about a bunch of the questions and your another Grez that you have bought. So
traded for.
Okay, well, that's okay, that makes it slightly better. Dear listener, if you want to join us on the Patreon, patreon.com/guitarnerds, you can go there and it gives you all the information on how you can support this lovely community of ours. Philip, how can people check out your podcast?
Oh, yeah. So you can find it everywhere you listen to podcasts. It is in whatever same player you're listening to this one on. Just search for 40 Watt Podcast. That's 40. You can go over to 40wattpodcast.com, where I am woefully behind on uploading the show notes there on the blog. But you can also find me on Instagram, Facebook. Also, all of the podcasts happen in video on YouTube. So please go subscribe on YouTube. My YouTube channel is so woefully underwatched. My new goal is to get to at least 1,000 subscribers by the end of this year. So,
woo.
Yeah, the audio is far more listened to than the videos are. So,
that is how podcasts work. I don't know what to possibly do to make a podcast interesting for people to watch on YouTube.
But, yeah, exactly.
Your lovely face might just about do it.
So. Did you flip your screen? Are you looking at the video?
I am. Yeah, sorry. I've got a different tab open, actually.
I see.
But there we go. Dear listener, we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Adios.
Well, that's it for another week of the Guitar Nerds podcast, which only leaves me to say thank you eternally and very, very muchly to all of our top-tier Patreon backers. Thank you very much to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hisiao Kaduaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Partick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and the wonderful Moog Graphics.